Welcome to Capital Talk, our weekly legislative analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I'm joined by University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine. Our colleague Chuck Johnson will rejoin us next week. And Rob, Senator Steve Daines made national headlines and sparked protests at his offices in Montana this week when he told Senator Elizabeth Warren to take her seat during debate over the confirmation of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. It was a moment of high drama, and it did not sit well with Senator Warren or with many Montanans.
You know, at stake here is what's called Rule 19, which governs debates on the floor of the Senate. And it says basically that you can't attack another senator on a personal level. And I actually think the rule on its own terms, the idea behind it, is a good one for the Senate. It establishes an expectation of civil discourse and respect for people who see things differently, keeping the focus on issues rather than personal attacks, things like this. And it seems to me that now more than ever, we could use more of that, not less. But in this incident, the Senate just seemed more to mirror our broader political culture rather than present a more refined version of it, which is what the founders originally intended the Senate to do. But on its own terms here, the real problem was the fact that Jeff Sessions was at the same time both a sitting senator and a nominee pending Senate confirmation. Warren's comments would have been a total non-issue in a normal confirmation debate in which the nominee wasn't a senator. But it's also the case that it's not totally unhinged to view her comments as a violation of Senate norms in the context of just everyday Senate business. And of course, as you say, Steve Daines got wrapped up in that this week.
Here's the exchange where Senator Daines, as the presiding chair of the Senate that day, interrupts Senator Warren. And if you listen very carefully, you can hear Senator Daines being prompted what to say by a Senate staffer.
Mr. President, I am surprised that the words of Coretta Scott King are not suitable for debate in the United States Senate. I ask leave of the Senate to continue my remarks.
Is there objection?
Object.
I appeal the ruling.
Objection is heard.
The Senator will take her seat.
The Senator will take her seat.
Now, Senator Daines, Rob, has claimed that none of this was pre-planned, but that begs credulity.
It does. I mean, I think in a way, Daines may very well have been caught in the crossfire here between McConnell and
that's
Warren,
Senator Mitch McConnell,
the majority leader. Daines just happened to be presiding over the Senate at the time. At least this is very plausible. And by the way, presiding over the Senate is no great honor. It's basically viewed as grunt work that gets rotated around among the junior senators. Now, I guess regardless of whether this was orchestrated ahead of time, we certainly shouldn't feel very sorry for Daines because following the incident, he rushed to his Twitter account to gloat about it, which seemed unfortunate and rather gratuitous. And once you do that, you kind of own it. And maybe he's okay with that. After all, Elizabeth Warren is arguably the closest thing to a party leader that the Democrats have in the post-Obama vacuum. And even if you had to pick right now, she might be the front runner for the Democratic presidential campaign in 2020.
Well, he's also fundraising over this incident. He sent out a fundraising letter saying that, quote, he hopes his supporters continue to stand up to Elizabeth Warren, her special interest allies, and the mainstream media. Now, for Senator Daines, the media, like for President Trump, is the enemy.
Right. And so whether this was something that Mitch McConnell and Steve Daines planned ahead of time or whether he just happened to be the one sitting in the chair when it happened, he's certainly looking to score some political points off it. And I'm not sure it's going to work because there are a lot of bad optics on this. For one, this rule that Elizabeth Warren allegedly violated, it's been selectively enforced over time. You know, in the past, it's operated much more as a norm, more of an issue of good manners, rather than something that you take a formal vote on, which the Senate did this week. So it looks like McConnell, at the very least, and Daines, by extension, were just kind of spoiling for a fight on this one. And then on top of that, people understandably look at this and see it as something of an affront to free expression. And on top of that, a lot of people have noted the gender dynamic. McConnell and Daines telling a female colleague to sit down and be quiet, it touches a nerve, to say the least. And then finally, I'd add that it's a bit hard to stomach having to watch Republicans get all pious and bent out of shape about decorum when most of them seem entirely unconcerned about the daily comments and tweets coming out of the White House.
Well, it's also sparked another boon in T-shirts with the "she persisted" comment from McConnell showing up.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to have sparked a bit of a backlash. I mean, I think what McConnell and Daines were hoping for was just a smooth and quick confirmation of Jeff Sessions. And of course, Sessions did get confirmed, but they really kind of sparked needlessly, I would say, a backlash. And Elizabeth Warren has been effective at capitalizing it. And so there we are.
There were a lot of protesters who went to Daines' offices in Kalispell, Missoula, and I think Billings. And also the editor of the Billings Gazette wrote a scathing editorial criticizing Daines and saying, quote, "For Daines to play any part of this scheme is shameful, un-American, and needs to be condemned," unquote.
You know, and I think on the merits there, some of the arguments weren't entirely compelling, and part of it goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning in terms of the norms of the Senate and how it's supposed to, by design, to be very different than, say, the House of Representatives. But nonetheless, I think what is remarkable is that this was in the Billings Gazette, which is considered a conservative newspaper by Montana standards. And it's certainly a paper that Daines would presumably care much more about seeing an editorial like that than, say, if it appeared in the Missoulian.
Well, lost in the kerfuffle over Elizabeth Warren, Senator Daines also heard from a lot of constituents upset at his vote for Education Secretary Betsy DeVos, who has donated money to his campaign in the past. But with or without a campaign donation, Rob, it seems to me Senator Daines would likely support DeVos regardless. They have similar views of education. For example, they both support more charter schools, more private schools, et cetera.
I think that's exactly right. We can sometimes get overly conspiratorial about trying to connect the dots with money on these things. The much more straightforward, obvious, and I think accurate assessment is just that Daines, like almost all of the Republicans, are at the very least sympathetic to DeVos's approach to handling public schools and seeking to increase funding towards charter schools and are open to the idea of private schools.
Hard to imagine he would not ever have voted for her.
Right, yeah. I mean, take the money out of the equation, he's still going to vote for her.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, in other Montana congressional news, the U.S. Senate is expected to confirm Congressman Ryan Zinke as Secretary of the Interior next week. And that will prompt Governor Bullock to call a special election to replace him. And local election officials want that special election to be by mail ballot only for two reasons. It's a lot cheaper and a lot easier than staffing polling places. And they argue it would enhance voter turnout. But Republican leaders are pushing against that.
They say that they're concerned about fraud, the idea that someone would steal ballots if they were just sent out in the mail or maybe fill out somebody else's and send multiple ballots back. And it's true enough that there have been isolated cases of this kind of thing apparently happening, but there hasn't been any substantiated instance of any kind of systematic and widespread voter fraud, which is what the Republicans seem to be concerned about. And Democrats say that, look, given this absence of any systematic widespread fraud, we should err on the side of ensuring that as many people as possible have the opportunity to vote. And as you mentioned, plus, you know, it's a lot cheaper than staging a normal election.
Like $500,000 cheaper
mm-hmm.
statewide.
That's right.
Well, finally, Rob, Missoula Republican Adam Hertz has introduced a bill in the state legislature to abolish Montana's death penalty. And such a bill has been introduced in every session in recent memory and never passed, though it's come close.
As you say, and I think this would come as a surprise to a lot of people, the death penalty in Montana has been hanging on by a thread. You might naturally assume that in a state with large Republican majorities in the legislature and being situated in the Mountain West, which is something of a death penalty-friendly region, that support for it would be solid. And my hunch is that if this appeared on the ballot and it was put to the voters, that the death penalty would have wide support. But in the legislature, it has just been hanging on. For many years, Dave Wansenried, a Missoula Democrat, had been the figure most associated with the push for repeal, and there were several legislative sessions in which his bills passed the Senate. Then, 2 years ago, Wansenried retired. But the Senate again voted to repeal the death penalty, and Representative Doc Moore, a Missoula Republican, carried the repeal effort in the House, and that fell just one vote short of passing. So this time, both of those guys are gone, but another Missoulian, Republican Adam Hertz, this time has picked up the torch. And in a hearing on his bill this week, no one testified against it.
Representative Hertz made both the moral and the economic arguments in that hearing.
Central to this bill is the idea that our government, which is so often wasteful, ineffective, and unjust, shouldn't be in the business of killing criminals who can safely and effectively be incarcerated at a fraction of the cost.
And he's right that sentencing someone to life in prison is cheaper than putting someone on death row.
Right, and that's one of the arguments against it. One of the interesting things about the death penalty legislation, I think, is that unlike a lot of issues where you more or less have a clear argument about why we should do this or that, when it comes to the death penalty, the arguments are all over the map. Some people approach it from kind of a social justice angle and a concern for the so-called root causes of crime. Meanwhile, you have budget hawks like Hertz who point to the cost, right? They say, look, it costs a lot more to execute someone once you factor in all the legal appeals and whatnot than it is to have someone in prison for a life without parole. And then you have some social and religious conservatives who draw a parallel between the death penalty and abortion and who understand their commitment to the pro-life cause to be not just limited to the unborn, but to also include people who've committed even the worst types of crime. So there are lots of different reasons.
Representative Laura Sheldon Galloway, whose sister-in-law was murdered, for her the economic argument isn't strong enough.
Death is death. Do we do it earlier or later? And I really believe that an inmate who has come to the Lord would want to pay that price on this life, because we all know we will pay a price either here or there. Why not make some of that redemption here?
Basically, she's saying you kill someone, you pay with your own death.
Right. I think that's an argument that resonates with a lot of people. And to try to view this through an economic budgetary lens totally misses the point, is your basic argument. It's not a matter of saving a few bucks. When you have someone commit the worst type of crime, this is a reasonable punishment.
Well, Rob, it seems Montana may keep the death penalty as the House Judiciary Committee, by one vote, 10-9, has voted to table Representative Hertz's bill to abolish it. You've been listening to Capital Talk, our weekly legislative analysis program. I'm Sally Mock, and I've been speaking with University of Montana political science professor Rob Saldine. Rob, thanks, and we'll talk to you next week.